call to order. All members of the committee are present at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we rescind our action in failing to pass out committee substitute for House Bill 130 Hess at our prior meeting.
Object.
Any further objection?
I have some amendments I'd like to offer to the bill.
You don't have the bill before us.
I thought we were taking up House Bill 130 at this time.
Taking our vote to rescind from not passing it out. You still maintain your objection?
Yeah, I object.
Object.
All in favor of rescinding? The amendment is the amendment. The motion is to rescind from our action from failing to pass out House Bill 130. If we rescind from that action, then the bill is properly before us.
Yeah, we can't take up any amendments or do anything on it unless we rescind our action.
That's right.
I disagree. I'm not following this.
Well, it's a parliamentary question, and we have been informed by the most knowledgeable parliamentarian, with the possible exception of Representative Pettyjohn, but Representative Mike Miller of Juneau, that what we have to do parliamentarily to deal with the bill at all, and the purpose is you can offer your amendments, but you can't do it now. And what we will do is rescind our action, and then you're perfectly free to offer an amendment.
What action did you take? You had a motion to move the bill out with individual recommendations, is that right?
And it failed.
And it failed. So the bill was not moved out. It remains within the committee.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We're not on the
motion is to rescind from our action yesterday.
Well,
which is failed to move it out.
So the effect of adopting this motion would be to move it out?
No, absolutely not. It would bring the bill back to us.
Well, I question whether that's necessary.
Let's proceed to the vote. All in favor of
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure I understand.
What is it?
It is our intent by this to allow you, if you want to make any amendments, you can do it. We're not. It will not have the effect of moving the bill out. We want to parliamentarily be sure that the bill is before us.
Is there any authority for this?
Representative Miller,
can someone cite me a rule?
Representative Miller,
yes. If I could just speak, when I offered my suggestions, I did not know an amendment was going to be proposed, and so it seemed to me the most convenient way.
Well, neither did we.
If the amendments are going to be proposed, then I would agree with Representative Pettyjohn that the motion is before you, or the bill is still in your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
However, I think it's still cleaner if you rescind it, because right now you're sitting on a decision the committee has made not to deal with the bill. But I think he's also right. For purpose of an amendment, the bill is before you, and you could, as long as it's been brought up in committee. I still think it's clean to rescind your action. Because otherwise, you're on record as not moving forward in any amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we took a vote. I wasn't here, and I apologize to the members of this committee. I really do for not being here. But we took a vote on whether or not that bill should be moved from committee. That bill was not moved from committee. That bill is still in front of this committee. I want to amend that bill, and then we can take up the question of moving it out after the amendments have been either accepted or rejected. And rescinding the vote yesterday, to me, is unnecessary and will confuse the record.
Mr. Chairman, I think in that case, let's just take up the amendments and get on with this.
Do you want to take up the time of this meeting with and your teleconference with the inevitable debate on this matter?
No, I really don't. Do you want to continue with Kelly?
Do you want me to withdraw my amendment and then just leave it until we'll take it up at another time? Since you've got people waiting out there, huh?
Well, teleconference is only going to last an hour and 10 minutes. Why don't we get to the teleconference, take it up afterwards?
I suggest we go to the teleconference. We're not going to have time otherwise to pass out the House Bill 80.
You may withdraw your motion.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you. And I'll turn it over to you for the teleconference.
Okay. We will take up House Bill 88. We have until 5:45. Okay, we have until 5:45 to deal with House Bill 88. At that time, I understand the subcommittee is going to be meeting on these education bills.
Mr. Chairman, may I please, before we pursue any further, could I ask the intention of the chair is relative to 1:30?
Yeah, the intention of the chair is to take testimony between now and 5:45. Between now and 5:30. Testimony will go between now and 5:30. And I will close testimony at 5:30, unless there is we haven't completed. I'll sort of play it by ear. But I would like, if possible, to have completed work on House Bill 88 by 5:45. And I have some amendments to offer to that I don't think will be really controversial or anything. Hopefully we can take those between 5:30 and 5:45, and we can then deal with House Bill 130 at 5:45. So that would be my intent, unless somebody has serious objection to that. Okay, fine. Hearing no objection, that will be the order. It is now 20 minutes to 5. I see that we have 7 people from Anchorage. I don't have any names. Do you have names there? We have 1 person from Dillingham, 3 from Ketchikan, 3 from Kodiak, 1 from Bethel, 1 from Petersburg, and 1 from Homer. That's 16 people. And I will give 5, and I don't know if there are any people from Juneau here. I'm going to give them a maximum of 3 minutes each on the bill, unless there is some emergency. Let us take the first witness from Anchorage. Moderator, are there people in Anchorage?
There sure are. One moment, please, and we'll have our first person come to the mic.
Yes. Why don't you see if people have particular time constraints, and I'd ask the other moderators if there are people with particular time constraints, and we would take those with particular time constraints first. Do you have the list? Names? Is there anybody else around the state who has a particular time constraint?
This is the moderator in Ketchikan, and we do have 1 person that has a time constraint here.
Fine, and I would ask the people who have not testified so far would begin. I'll strike that. Okay, is the person from Ketchikan available to testify now?
Yes.
Okay, please give us your name, spell your last name, and the group you represent. And I'd ask everybody to hold their testimony to 3 minutes or less if possible.
Andrea Jacobson, JACOBSON, representing Ketchikan Police Department.
Please commence.
Okay, I have a couple of concerns. First of all, with the first section of this bill, the Endangering the Welfare of a Minor statute. To me, it seems like in Section 1, a C felony isn't really harsh enough, and I would prefer that it would be a B felony. And actually, that it seems to me that they've lowered the age to 12, and I've found a lot of cases just in my work where that age isn't enough. And in the original bill, I believe it was 18, and I'd like to see it go back to that. The second section of that same statute with the Endangering the Welfare of the Minor in the second degree, Section 1 of that, I think it's vague, but at the same time, it can represent the non-touching offenders that we have. For instance, the parents that are aware of sexual abuse continuing in their home, but let it happen. And to me, a C felony would be more appropriate than an A misdemeanor. The second part of that, we're making the criminal consequences for child neglect. I think that's appropriate to be an A misdemeanor, and I'm very glad to see that they're finally considering criminal consequences for that kind of crime.
Do you have other testimony, ma'am?
Yeah, I'm trying to turn the page. The other part that I wanted to talk about was the Section 13, where it was the reporting of the child abuse and neglect. Part B of that listed, was kind of complicated, actually, as for the reporter, knowing, depending on who the perpetrator was, if it was somebody that was in charge of the child's welfare, they wanted it to be reported to a social service agency, and then if it was, you know, anybody else or perhaps somebody they didn't know, then they should go ahead and report that to law enforcement. And I'd like to see that all be combined under report to the law enforcement, with law enforcement responsible for reporting that to social services. The reason for that is that even if it is a family member, I look at child abuse as being not just a family problem, but as a crime. And in those situations, there's still evidence to be collected, and there's still a lot of reasons for having, you know, the law enforcement in on it immediately, rather than waiting the statutory, whatever it is, before we ever get the report from the district attorney. I'm also concerned with the fact that it does seem to lead to the years of where certain kinds of child abuse is handled, like incest, for instance. I think that there are still a lot of people out there that think it can be resolved as a family problem, and I think that without the hammer of the system above those people's heads, it won't ever get done. Nothing will get done about that. I've written a letter concerning these issues to Representative Capone, and unfortunately didn't get mailed till yesterday. But some of those same things I just mentioned were outlined in that letter.
Does that complete your testimony, ma'am?
Yes, it does.
Questions by any member of the committee? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from any station who has a particular time constraint?
Just a participant from Homer does.
I'll take the Homer participant now.
name is Andrew Klamser, K-L-A-M-S-E-R. I'm speaking for myself, although I'm with the Homer Police Department, and I'm the investigator assigned to all crimes against children here. I'd like to first talk about the endangering the welfare of a minor in the second degree section. I just want to urge you to pass that. We're currently embroiled in a case now with a daycare center where the operator allowed the perpetrator to continue activities there, and there really isn't any section to charge that person under. I think this is a section that is badly needed. I also do not see anywhere in House Bill 88 a statute that would provide for prosecution for physical assaults of children. Most other states have a felony statute that covers the physical assault to children. Right now in Alaska, the only thing we have to cover that is fourth degree assault, assuming there isn't lasting a serious physical injury. I find that to be something that's a very serious problem, and I'd like to see Alaska come up with a felony statute for the physical assault of children. Under the reporting statute, the amendments to that on section 9, it reads employees and volunteers of domestic violence programs or crisis shelters. I believe that it may be helpful to clean up that language a little bit by saying employees and volunteers of domestic violence and or sexual assault programs or crisis shelters. Now turning to page 10 of House Bill 88, section 47.17.060, under evidence not privileged. I believe that it would be a mistake to make the psychotherapist patient privilege basically privileged. I don't believe that that should be privileged. I think that psychologists and psychiatrists should be required to report. And that's all the testimony I have.
Thank you very much, Officer Klamser. Any questions by any members of the committee? Representative Pedro.
Officer Klamser, on the point you made on having a statute on assaulting children, are you stating then that you don't feel the penalties for fourth degree assault or third degree assault are adequate when the victim is a child, and you want a special statute dealing with that, or just a greater sentencing, or what's your position on that?
I think the rift between third degree assault and fourth degree assault is too great. We need something that specifically addresses the issue of assaulting children. Right now, it's basically illegal for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District to spank children. That's technically a fourth degree assault. And yet, the burden of proof to make the third degree assault section is too great. What we need is a statute that defines what is a physical assault of a child. And I believe that that should be a Class C felony.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much, Officer Klamser. Anyone else with a particular time constraint? Thank you. Otherwise, I will start with Anchorage. Is the first witness ready to testify in Anchorage?
He sure is.
Please give us your name, spell your last name, and your group, sir.
Ma'am.
Can you hear me?
Please start, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Yes, my name's Celia Warrior, and I head up SLAM, Society's League Against Molestation. And we are operating through a threefold program of education, legislation, child and family support. We have to go up here last, and we'd like to see a public safety bill passed where the public would be prepared before letting offenders out on the street. We'd like to see a clinic funded where it would be operating on a 24-hour basis, have physicians there to examine the children, and we work with the crime lab to gather the evidence to be there when it's brought into court. And there's a lot of evidence that is lost because that's what it's done, and something was done too much time lapse there. So we'd like to have a clinic like this to be all right. We have a, I have a personal interest in Section 5. There's a parent that contacted me because their little girl was brought to class in a situation involving she was raped by a friend of the family when she was around 7.5 years old. Because they didn't discover what happened to her, their daughter was taken to a doctor for unrelated medical problems. And while the lady thought they was examining her, the little girl broke down and all this came to light. The problem is that we're 6 months over the statute of limitations expired. And they, House Bill 117 was retroactive and it didn't cover the situation here. They couldn't prosecute them under that. And Section 5 here that I see, I don't see, there's a provision in there that would enable them to prosecute this guy. He's it right now, he's running around loose.
Ma'am, we're really pressed for time. We're trying to report this bill out today, and we have a number of people from around the state. Could you summarize anything else you have to say?
Hello?
This is Chairman Gruenberg. We have a number of witnesses from around the state, and we're trying to hold everybody to 3 minutes, and I see you've been considerably over 3 minutes. Could you summarize anything else so we can move on to the next witness, please?
Broad-based and this language definitely needs more discussion. Goes into good touching, bad touching, incest cases about offending parents, and it goes into the overlaps in the that talks about the presumptive. It goes into presumptive sentencing code, and we're wholly in support of that. There are a lot of groups that are bringing that up. They're trying to wipe it out.
She
we have judges, lawyers, not just inmates, but we have judges and prisoners who have some kind of adulterous affair going on between them, and they're not. They seem to be some type of a collusion or lies, before we call it, where they're conspiracy to do away with the laws. And there's a lot of people that have problems with the laws. This is a very good law, but I think they're away with the professional sentencing, but to, there's people that have concerns about it. They need to be addressed and all that. But also, well, the rest of the bill sounds pretty good. The Hospital 88, it sounds pretty good on the whole. I'd just like to close with a verse there. Second Timothy seems appropriate. And it's just First Timothy chapter 1, 8 verse. And it says,
"We
don't
let
the law
as
good
as
men who
is lawful." I always like that. King James,
and
Jesus,
Timothy. I mean, King James, Timothy.
Did you get that message to them? I can't cut her off.
Yes,
I
did. Well, I'm not sure which one that was. I don't want to take the time anymore.
Is there? There's no way I can override that.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you giving the chance.
No questions, right? Thank you very much, ma'am. We have no questions on this end. May I please, at this point, take the next witness from Anchorage?
Well-meaning lady.
She
works very hard.
Turn it up so we can hear
you. I don't think she gets paid.
No.
You're built hard to ask.
We got people.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Please give us your name, spell your last name, and your group. And I'd like to hold testimony to 3 minutes. And please, we'll time you very carefully because we want to finish this bill today.
My name is Jay McCarthy, McCarthy. I'm an attorney with the Office of Public Advocacy, Anchorage 900 West 5th Avenue, Suite 525, Anchorage, Alaska, 99501.
Please commence, Mr. McCarthy.
Primarily, the focus I just wanted to state was I think that it is important that the reporting statute remain a civil statute and not become a criminal statute in nature. And I base this upon years of working as a guardian ad litem, where I am to advocate the child's best interest in court. I think what's very important is to clarify when you say Department of Law, if you're referring to the Attorney General's Office for purposes of child and youth aid proceedings or the District Attorney's Office for criminal proceedings. I'm confused by the draft I have read. If the intention of this is to provide protective services to the child and to prevent future harm, I have no quarrel with that. If the purpose of the statute is additionally criminal prosecution, I have some real problems, and I feel that from my work with kids, I fear that we'll be to a point where children may not report. If they report knowing that they're going to be receiving protective services, I think they're much more likely to. I'd like to try to answer any questions if there is any of the committee.
Any questions for Mr. McCarthy? Thanks, Jay. We don't have anything. Appreciate your coming down to testify.
Thank you.
I see we have several witnesses from the MATSU. Are they available to testify? Is the MATSU on the line here?
Yes, we have one.
Okay, please commence. Have the person give name, spell, a last name, and the group. We'd like to hold the testimony to 3 minutes or under, if possible, please.
Yes, this is Raleigh Porch, and I represent the Alaska State Troopers. I'm an investigator with the troopers, and have been so employed for the last 15 years, 14 and a half years in the field of investigation. I'd like to comment on several areas here of Senate Bill 88 or House Bill 88. The first one is in reference to endangering the welfare of a minor. I believe that's very important that you get in there, the fact that parents who put their kids in danger again for a molestation or a sexual offense to occur, that you have something there that the parents or the person responsible for the kid can be charged and held accountable. We have cases out here in the Valley where a sexual offender is arrested, convicted, sent to jail, brought back out, and the parent takes the child over to a motel room, and the sexual abuse again occurs, and there's not a darn thing we can do about it. She's not an accomplice, and there's not much we can do about it. So I think that that needs to be addressed. Also, in reference to the evidence of past sexual conduct in trials, defense attorneys are more than willing to go right up to the absolute limit to have judges raise their voices to them, threaten them to keep them from getting in any type of past sexual conduct on in relationship to victims. We had a case out here, foster parent molesting a foster child, and the attorney did everything but violate the court orders, and there's a question there on getting evidence that this girl did possibly have a prior sexual activity. She was in the foster home, for Pete's sakes, because she had been molested, and that's the reason she was in the foster home. Why should all that be brought out? All we're having to deal with is one item. Was she molested on this date by this person? And I think that sometimes that gets confused. On the persons that are to report, I believe that you left out a very important person. And I believe that person is the Christian counselors at and the religious counselors that are counseling people whom just walk in off the street or whatever, and they have no duty to report. Here in the Valley, I see that as a particular problem also. I do believe when you do have a molest taking place out of the home, that the proper agency is the law enforcement to report to. But I would not want all reports going to law enforcement. DFYS certainly has to be in the evaluation process to evaluate criminal and civil, and I really believe that. I don't think everything should be sent to law enforcement, but I believe that the out-of-home molest possibly could. I think they could. I think that House Bill 88 will go a long way in increasing the number of reports that are going to be made statewide. I think that once we keep doing the good things for the victims and become more victim-oriented, that more victims are going to come forward as they have within the last couple of years. That's all I have. I hope I was under 3 minutes.
Thank you, Officer. Are there any questions from any of the members of the committee? Thank you very much. Next, we have some people up in Fairbanks to testify. Is there anyone available to testify in Fairbanks?
Yes, we have at least seven who would like to testify. Laurie Sanders would like to go first.
Thank you. Would Ms. Sanders please approach?
I am here to tell you a story. The story is about a little girl. She's six. She has long, dark hair, and she's very small. She's the smallest girl in her new first grade class. Her and her family have just moved, and she has no friends yet. That is why she's in the basement watching her daddy clean his guns. Daddy is very tall, big, strong, and handsome. He has been to Vietnam twice already. Daddy is perfect. Everyone says so. They're all proud of him. Her daddy stops what he is doing and looks at her, his eyes lighting up as he smiles. Looking at her eyes, she feels so special and well-loved. But slowly that look fades, and something else replaces it. She knows what it is. She begins to feel uneasy and frightened. He calls her to her to come and help him. She runs up to the stairs and into the kitchen. Her mother is there, washing dishes. She now feels safe. Her daddy yells up, "Come on down and help me clean up." She turns to leave the kitchen, pretending that she doesn't hear him. Her mother stops her and says, "Go on down and help out. It won't hurt you." She tells her mother, "No, Mama, please, I don't want to help." Her mother sends her down anyway, saying that she should spend more time with her father. So to the basement she went. Within 15 minutes, she was quietly crying and sitting in a cold, dark corner in the basement all alone. There was blood and slime running down her legs. She was very still, but her mind was screaming, "No. Why? Am I so bad? What is wrong with me? Why does Daddy always hurt me? Oh, God, please. Please help me." The little girl's molestation continued from state to state, day to day, year to year, for 10 years and in 6 different states. It didn't end until she ran away from home. Her name is Laurie. She is the victim. My name is Laurie, and I am the survivor. I'm the little girl who was raped almost every day for 10 years by my fine and upstanding father. I am now 24. I didn't disclose until a year ago. At that time, the secret of my humiliation and shame had festered and poisoned my whole being. It undermined everything that I was trying to do to become a whole person. I got therapy, and after seeing an individual therapist for 2 months, I had to miss 2 appointments. When I called to reschedule, I found that there were no appointments available and wouldn't be for at least 6 weeks. I also found that at that time, my bill had reached a total of $1,671. There were no appointments available, and I really couldn't afford therapy. Also during this time, I was involved in a group long ago and far away, and it was the love and the caring and the understanding of the other survivors in the group and the facilitators that carried me through a lot of bad times. Without this, I probably wouldn't be able to come here today and talk to you. I found out last October that my father also had been sexually, physically, and mentally abused as a child. I found out that his parents had abused him, their parents had abused them, and it was an ongoing thing in my family. Parents abused their children, the children abused each other, and they in turn grew up to abuse their own child. I never told anybody because I never felt I could. But I always wanted to. When I finally reached a point that I was able to tell, I found out that the statute of limitations was no longer going and that I couldn't do anything then. I still have a little brother at home. They won't let me see him or talk to him. And I can only hope that he's okay and that he's strong enough to speak out and protect himself. I'm doing everything that I can to put a stop to this horrible family legacy. Please, will you please do something and put an end to children's silent suffering and break the silence that endangers and can destroy them? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sanders. Any questions by any member of the committee? Hearing none, I see we have 4 witnesses in Kodiak. Is Kodiak on the line?
Yes, we are. First to testify is Julie Bolden.
Please commence. Give us your name, spell your last name, and the group you represent. And please, we're trying to hold this to 3 minutes or under.
My name is Julie Bolden. Last name is B-O-L-D-E-N, and I'm representing myself. I was somewhat misled. Not really misled, but I didn't really understand what all is involved in a teleconference. I'll try to generalize my questions, which I know most of them won't be answered, but I'd like to raise some questions to the committee to think about
when they pass this or subsequent legislation. My question is not whether the abuse happens or not, but my concern is with protection of the people that are accused. In the fact of, if you look at Section 1, my question is, how does this affect when you concern runaways? It doesn't make sense to me how all these things apply from one to another. To go down to try to speed this up, under Section 7, they have the rape shield clause. And what I see is you lose an element of surprise. We're tipping our hand to the prosecution having to tell them everything that's occurring. But what I'd like to see in that respect is it's more specific on what can be allowed and what can't be allowed. You don't want a lot of garbage in there that doesn't pertain. But when things do pertain, if the victim has a prior act of having done the same thing or accused somebody wrongly before, I think there should be something taken into consideration with that. And another point I would like to see in legislation to help everybody involved is that the ages of the children should be taken into consideration. A 4-year-old shouldn't be treated the same way as a 16-year-old. Their methods and their ways of talking and dealing with problems are totally different. A 4-year-old has no idea what the repercussions are of what they say. And a 16-year-old can be vindictive. They can try to get even. They can be made uncomfortable if someone looks at them wrong. And from what I understand, this is what is happening now, that it appears to me that all touching is becoming illegal, and it's up to the defendant to prove that they've touched in an acceptable manner. I think things need to be defined more clearly in this realm. If you take an example, if you've changed your daughter's diapers, have you done it in the right way? Are you open for charges because you didn't do it right, or someone thinks that you didn't do it right? And my few of my questions also pertain to, I'd like to know where the line is drawn between government and parents as to who knows best when they remove children from the home. Granted, these things do happen, but you need to consider to protect those people that are unjustly accused. That's the thing, that maybe there is something we need to find a way to protect the parents' rights. We have very few left, and what I see is tremendous snowballing of destroying the family unit. I think we need to have protection clauses for the parents in here. Now, we may need different legislation that may not pertain to what you're discussing here. I am not a lawyer, but I am. I do know some of what's going on. And I'd also think there need to be even more clarification on what is considered abuse or neglect. I can see a real problem in the agencies having to report something that's on hearsay. If you have a daycare provider that sees a child as dirty, well, does that mean that child's abused, or does it mean the child is dirty and has been playing outside? There needs to be more clarification, and the people who make these determinations need to have more restrictions or more guidelines to go by before they make some rash decisions and take on these types of cases. My biggest concern is that there's not enough rights to the parents, and there needs to be something added to this. I guess that pretty much concludes what I have to say.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bolden. Any questions by any members of the committee? Thank you very much. I see we have a witness from Dillingham. Is Dillingham on the line? Is Dillingham on the line?
My participant would like to wait a while, and maybe you can come back to her if there's enough time later on.
Thank you. I will assume that there is no testimony from Dillingham unless you let me know to the contrary. Before we conclude the testimony, I'll ask if there's any other testimony anywhere else. I see we have a witness from Bethel. Is there a witness in Bethel who'd like to testify? Is Bethel on the line?
Yes, Sarah Kelly from Bethel, and I'm representing Southwestern Alaska Council for Prevention of Child Sexual Abuse. I just have a couple of things that I would like to either have someone clarify them for me, or I'll just throw them out as a question. Okay, the first question is, whenever there is a report to be made to the Division of Family and Youth Services, there are questions asked as, for instance, is the perpetrator, is he from the home, or is he out of the home, perpetrator? And if he is out of the home, like an uncle or grandfather or cousin, then they say, well, we can't really do anything about that. However, as far as I'm concerned, a crime has been committed and somebody is responsible. to investigate. And our project does not do investigations, and that really does handicap our work here when people are throwing the book around. Another question that I have problem is whenever there is an adult that is mentally handicapped to the age level of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and he or she is being sexually abused by older members of the community, and then especially right around 15 or 16 and then 17, people that we report to say, well, there is a consensus made there. However, when the child or this adult is mentally handicapped, he does or she does fall under our protection because of the level. And the third one, the lady that just testified from Kodiak or wherever, I think parents are able to protect themselves. Children are taught to be submissive. Therefore, we as adults have to take the time and energy and the caring to help protect them so they can grow up and not to abuse other people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any questions of Ms. Kelly? Thank you very much, ma'am. I see we have a witness from Petersburg. Is Petersburg on the line? Is Petersburg on the line?
Yes, this is Marion Estelle, E-S-T-E-L-L-E, and I'm the director of Petersburg Children's Center and also the legislative chair for the Business and Professional Women's Association of Alaska. I have a couple of quick questions. One is referring to Section 8, subsection A1, regarding the minor has been abandoned. And that's on page 4 of my copy of this.
Could you give us, please, the bill, or rather the statute number that amends? Okay. Petersburg, are you on the line, Ms. Estelle? Okay. We will come back to Petersburg. Haynes, are you on the line?
Yes, we are.
We will come back to Petersburg. We've apparently lost them. I see you have a witness that wishes to testify.
My name is Susan Fredericks, and I was involved last year with child abuse and attended the governor's conference in Sitka concerning it. And the impact of that conference pointed to very clearly to the fact that it is a continuing snowballing effect through the generations. If you are an abused child, you will, evidence has pointed out, it will continue through the generations, just as we heard former testimony. And that I really felt that judicial reform through laws would be most beneficial for the child, and I'm very glad to see that this bill is coming forth, and I encourage you to continue it. I would also ask, as with Ms. Bolden, her name was it, from previous testimony, that there be a section on that family unit to uphold that family unit in a right sort of a way. I don't know how it could be. Maybe it's additional legislation, but I do believe that the parents have a right to have a family unit and it not be destroyed in any case. There are many sections here where it just would be on verbal testimony of a child, and that strong wording. A child can turn that testimony if it's a child that has some problems of its own and it is not the parent's fault. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Fredericks. Any questions for Ms. Fredericks? Hearing none, we have some other witnesses, I believe, in Ketchikan. Is Ketchikan still on the line?
Yes, this is Floyd Richmond. I'm the Executive Director of Women in Safe Homes. My last name is spelled R-I-C-H-M-O-N-D. Our agency is also a member of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and so in part I'm here to testify some about that. I'm going to go through this real quick, since I know you're really pressed for time. And my major concern and focus at this point really has to do with any proposed fiscal notes that might be attached to House Bill 88 or subsequent legislation. The major issue that I want to raise today is the fact that no one single entity in this business of trying to impact child abuse can do the job alone. There are many network programs across the state that are attempting to impact the problem of child abuse in the very fact that anytime we have domestic violence, we have child abuse. About 95% of the women that we see in our immediate safety service program here in Ketchikan have children that come with them. And they are viewing abuse, either directly or indirectly, through the alleged perpetrator of domestic violence, or in fact, observing the violence being perpetrated against the woman. So through our educational programs, through our work with women in domestic violence and sexual assault arenas, we're highly involved in this partnership that's necessary to begin to impact the problem that obviously is at epidemic proportions in the state of Alaska. I think it's important for the legislature, and I applaud their efforts today, to recognize that a partnership has to be available in each community, and we feel very good about what we're doing here in Ketchikan together as public and private agencies.
Thank you very much, Mr. Richmond. Does that complete your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Any questions for Mr. Richmond? Representative Taylor.
Yes, Floyd, this is Representative Taylor. Could you send up to the committee, please, in more detail, the fiscal note concerns that you have regarding the implementation of this legislation?
Yes, I would, Robin, and thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, we really need that because we have not had much fiscal impact presented to us yet, and so we'd appreciate it very much.
I will do that immediately.
And, Mr. Richmond, this bill has several other committees to go to, and we'll make sure that it gets to the proper committee. Even if it passes out of this committee. We're concerned about the time with only 30 days left in the session, but Representative Taylor and I and Representative Pettijohn are on the Judiciary Committee where the bill will go next, and we'll make very certain that your information gets to the proper committee.
Okay, and I appreciate that because I did limit my testimony today because I got the feeling in listening to others as well as yourself that you were more interested in the technical part of this bill. But the story is fairly large, and there are a number of programs that have a lot of impact on child abuse.
Thank you. I see that Ms. Estelle is back on the line from Petersburg. Are you there, ma'am?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
I certainly can, and I'm not sure where you left off, so why don't you just start again?
This is Marion Estelle, E-S-T-E-L-L-E, and I'm the director of Petersburg Children's Center and also active in the State Federation of Business and Professional Women. I have one quick question, and it's in regard to Section 9, Subsection A1. The minor has been abandoned. I would like to know if there is a definition somewhere about of the term abandoned.
What page is she on, Max?
It's a different version, I think. It's a previous version.
She wants the definition of abandoned.
Yeah, abandoned. Ma'am, why don't you pass on to your next comment, and we will get you an answer. It's going to take us a minute to look that up. Do you have other comments while we're looking up for an answer for you on that?
My only other comment is more philosophical, and it does relate to the financing of enforcement and follow-through on the laws that we care very much about passing this year. We all know, I'm sure, that if we're going to keep the standards and the laws that we're proposing and passing, we're going to have to give some real legislative priority to the be put into effect in our state. I think if they sit in the books and are unenforceable because of fiscal underfunding, we will have done no favor to our children. Thank you.
Yeah, but neglect is.
Thank you very much. With respect to your, this is Representative Gruenberg, with respect to your question concerning abandonment, the term abandon is not defined in the statute, but there's a common law definition of abandonment. It's a term that's not only common to this statute, but common to other statutes as well, like the adoption statute uses the term abandonment. And abandonment normally connotes a permanent abandonment of a child, or of a more or less permanent nature. And I'm referring to an Alaska Supreme Court case, the case of AJN. The test for abandonment is whether there is, quote, conduct on the part of the parent, which implies a conscious disregard of the obligations owed by a parent to the child, leading to the destruction of the parent-child relationship. And that's, as I say, a term that's well defined in the law, in the family law area. Does that answer your question, ma'am?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Anchorage, do you have another witness?
Yes. This is Richard Block. My last name is spelled B-L-O-C-K. I am appearing here this afternoon on behalf of myself as a Christian Scientist and as a member of the Christian Science Church in Anchorage and a member of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston. I'm also speaking on behalf of the Committee on Publication, or the Christian Science Committee on Publication for Alaska, which is really the arm of the church, which normally would speak to legislative matters. As you know, the practicing Christian Scientist relies exclusively on prayer for physical healing, would rely on prayer for themselves and for the members of their families. And our purpose in coming before this committee today is really only to seek protection of this right to practice our religion and to engage in healing through the application of prayer and through spiritual means, as that is already embodied in Alaska law, and to clarify that protection in two specific places within House Bill 88. In the proposed 1151.110, which is Section 2, I believe, of the bill, I believe in an effort to encompass all possible instances of child abuse, there is included in the definition of what constitutes this particular crime, the failure to give medical attention. And it is already recognized in another section of the criminal code, 1151.120, that a parent relying on Christian Science and relying on spiritual means of prayer for healing is not, by virtue of that, failing to provide medical attention. And we would ask that there be a provision added to 1151.110, I believe it's A2, I believe that's where it would go, or subsection 2, language similar to that which is in 120 that clarifies that point. The second area of concern is in the reporting statutes, chapter 4717. Because of the way that statute 4717.020 and some of the definitional statutes, which are already in the law, when those are read together, they would seem to have the effect of requiring a spiritual healing practitioner, or our terminology would be a Christian Science practitioner, to report a situation in which a conscientious and sincere parent seeking prayerful help for a child with a physical problem would have to report that. And I do not believe that that is what the legislature intended. It is certainly not consistent with other provisions that provide protection for Christian Science treatment in Title 47, particularly 4710.80 and 4710.085. And we would ask that in Section 4717.020, I believe I have that correct, that there be added an additional subsection. And I trust that for purposes of your work, we are working on a working draft, which was handed out here this afternoon, dated 4185. And if that's the case, we would urge that there be added a subsection E to 4717.020, which clarifies that that relying on Christian Science treatment is not failure to provide medical attention, and a Christian Science practitioner would not be obligated to report that situation. Although I would point out that a Christian Science practitioner is already obligated under 4717 to report cases of true child abuse that come to their attention. We do not seek to be relieved from that obligation. Now, there has already been some written comment given, I believe, to Nancy Bennett, who is the aide to your committee, and I believe that she has also picked up some information from the Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services, Connie Sipes, with specific language. And I can give that language now, but I believe that Nancy has that specific language that we propose be added. And unless there are questions, that would conclude my testimony. And I appreciate an opportunity to speak to you this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Block. Are there any questions or comments concerning those amendments? As you're aware, Mr. Block, the department has supported your First Amendment, and I would intend to offer that at the time we mark the bill up. I'm not intending to offer the Second Amendment, but any other member may desire to do that.
May I speak to that, Representative Grunberg?
Of course.
I realize that in a letter from the Department of Health and Social Services, they supported the first one and not the second. But since that time, I have spoken with Connie Sipes, and she has pointed out her concerns. Her concern was that maybe we were too broadly making an exemption by putting it in the definition of neglect provisions. and I happen to agree with her in reflections. I think she is right. But she and I have agreed that the adding of Section E to 4717.020 is appropriate, is limited in its scope, and is necessary in order to avoid the possible burden that might be placed on a Christian Science practitioner to file a report and be subject to criminal penalties if they did not.
I see. Thank you. Does that lead any other member to any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Block.
Thank you.
I see we have some additional witnesses from Fairbanks.
And this witness wishes to remain anonymous.
That's just fine.
I'll say my first name is Debbie and my second name is on record. I am the parent of a victim who was abused at a young age by someone who had regular access to her. She was abused in every way you mention in all parts of your bill and then some, over a period of 3 years when she was out of the home at these at this regular access time. I wish to say that I am very happy to see this bill. I have a few comments and questions. Also, by the way, I am a teacher at a local junior high school, and so come into contact with children who do fall into some of these categories as well as having the personal experience with this. The first thing I'd like to point out is in Section 1151-100, as was also pointed out by your first person to testify, it was changed in the original bill from age 18 to age 12 now. I would like to state that I feel that age 16 would be a better age than age 12. Working with 13 and 14-year-old students, I feel that when they are not financially responsible, that makes them very vulnerable to the people who are their caretakers. And I feel that not before age 16 would I even consider thinking that a child would be in a position to free themselves of such abuse or neglect. Secondly, I would like to speak to the section, and I can't find it. Again, it was mentioned to me somewhere along the line on the limitation for prosecution. When dealing with a young child, or perhaps as has been shown, any person who was intimidated to speak out when they were a child, it becomes important to extend that time period as long as possible. I would like to see it extended to at least 10 years, to 5 to 10 years. In my personal case, my child was quiet for 3 years. The perpetrator was an expert at sophisticated manipulation and intimidation. And that's where my child had access to a very willing and helpful parent, but she would not speak out. Also, I would like to ask a question of the committee. On the original bill, there was a section on hearsay evidence, and I would like to make some further comments, but first, I'm wondering what happened to the section on hearsay evidence in the final or in the work draft?
We passed out the hearsay evidence bill, Debbie, as a separate bill. It's House Bill 67. And it's the Hess version, and the Legislative Information Office in Fairbanks should have a copy that they should be able to give you right there.
Okay, I appreciate that. Excuse me. I feel that's an extremely important thing, and I'm very happy to hear that. I have one other point to make, and I realize this doesn't pertain specifically to this bill, but I hope you will bear with me when I mention it. I believe in certain states, bills are being proposed, if not have already been acted on, concerning having a child advocate in a courtroom. This does not preclude the opportunity for the defendant to be faced by his accuser, but what it does do is it enables a child who may be very young or even not so young, who has been intimidated in one way or another by the accuser, by the perpetrator, from having to, number one, deal directly with that person or with a defense attorney. As adults, we all know that we can be taken apart by an attorney on the other side. To ask a 4, 5, 6, 7, 9-year-old child, 12-year-old child to do that is inhumane, in my opinion. A child advocate would serve the purpose of reinterpreting a question to the child in full view of the courtroom and the defendant, and could also have the eye contact with a child who was very hesitant to have eye contact with the attorneys or the defendants or the jurors. I feel this is something that we as a state, as human beings, need to look into. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Debbie? Hearing none, we will pass to the Matsu. Is there another witness in Matsu?
Yes, there is. My name is Miriam Sumner, S-U-M-N-E-R, with Alaska Foster Parent Association. I am testifying as a 10-year foster parent and also as legislative chairman of the Alaska Foster Parent Association. We have several concerns over House Bill 88, which I will just briefly go over because I think each of the committee members has received a letter from Alaska Foster Parent Association, including a position statement on child abuse and neglect in foster families. Our first concern in the first sections includes the endangering the welfare of a minor in that we are a little concerned over going to criminalizing rather than treating. And I would like people to give some thought to that if we prosecute for first offenses, then we are not able to treat these people as effectively, and it does cut down the number of children who do report. On the second section, which is the endangering the welfare of a minor in the second degree, on the section that says exposing the minor to physical injury by failing to provide with necessary food, clothing, shelter, or medical attention, I would like to point out that in the case of foster parents and daycare parents, they are not financially responsible for all of those particular issues, and that can cause some particular problems in implementation of this bill. Under the evidence of past sexual conduct in trials for sexual offense, Alaska Foster Parent Association is somewhat concerned in children that have been physically or sexually abused do have problems. They have knowledge that other children do not have, and it has been shown that they at times do make accusations against foster and adoptive families in order to return home, get other needed attention, or for other reasons. And we do feel like that it is necessary to have the section in here about so that it can be looked at by a judge, because at times a child has been removed from a foster home, from many foster homes, as many as seven in one case, because of their sexual acting out. They're trying to entice sexual favors. When they did find a weak foster parent who did molest the child, he is guilty, and we would want him to be so charged, but it should be taken into account that this child does have those kind of problems and work on the treatment of that child and do take those facts into consideration. Under the section on touching a child for sexual abuse, I have some concerns over whose interpretation of normal touching in caretaker duties. In a foster home, also in daycare situations, that can be a real questionable kind of situation because we are families. We are caring for children who are a part of our family. On a pat on the behind or a scuffling mat with kids can involve some touching that is not meant to be sexual. But, you know, whose interpretation is going to be used in that particular factor? One of the biggest concerns that we have over this bill is the very last section on violations, and that the department can devise a system of civil enforcement, including fines up to $200 a day for violations of licensing statutes or regulations in foster homes. The regulations for foster homes are fairly vague, including a lot of words like immediately, which in various situations can mean that exact minute. It can mean on Monday morning when the office opens again, or it can mean 2 weeks down the road, depending on whose interpretation. So if a foster parent does have a violation of not reporting something immediately, their fire extinguisher has gone down, or they don't, their written fire escape plan isn't accurate or whatever, they could be charged up to $200 a day. And we're really concerned because foster parents do not get paid for their job, they get a partial reimbursement of expenses for children. I know that the purpose of this section was to have some form of disciplinary measure for facilities that could not be regulated in other ways. Foster homes can be regulated in other ways because placements do not have to be made into those homes. And so I feel like that if foster parents knew that they could be fined for $200 a day for minor violations of regulations that are already vague and under question in a lot of instances, that this would prevent people from becoming foster parents and remaining foster parents. I would like to say that we as foster parents deal with the children who have been physically and sexually abused and neglected all the time. We are greatly concerned over the children, but we also have to look at the factor of reality and what is going on with these kids and with families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sumner. We have here Connie Seip from the Department of Health and Social Services, and rather than taking the time now, what I want you to do is we'd like your telephone number, and I've asked staff Nancy Bennett to have a conference telephone call between you and she and Ms. Seip to try to work out these problems. If we need to amend that section of the bill, we're not going to pass the bill out today. There are too many people to testify, and so you can come back to us if we need to make any changes. What is your telephone number there?
It's 745-7797.
Fine. Ms. Bennett will be in contact with you probably, hopefully, at some time tomorrow. It's a time that's convenient for you and Ms. Seip so we can get this particular problem cleared up. I'm also concerned about Section 27, but it may be just fine the way it is, or it just may need some explanation to you. Otherwise, we'll deal with that. Any other questions by any members of the committee? Thank you very much. We have somebody additional from Ketchikan. Are they on the line?
I'm Constance Griffith, just here for myself. Actually, most of what I had in mind has been covered, and the committee itself has rewritten one thing. One bit of trivia, in Section 17, immunity, it just crossed my mind that when you say a person who, in good faith, makes a report or participates, is it possible that the perpetrator could get immunity? This is probably pretty ridiculous. But I don't have anything else now because everything's been taken care of that I'm thinking about. Thank you.
But I'm not exactly sure I understand your hypothetical situation. If you'd like, rather than taking the time now, possibly you could give Ms. Bennett a call or she could get in touch with you and discuss this. I think that hopefully that could be cleared up rather than going into a hypothetical situation. Would that be satisfactory for you?
Sure.
Would you like her to give you a call, or would you like to contact us? What's your pleasure?
If she could give me a call, that would be fine.
What is your number, ma'am?
225-5069.
Okay, Ms. Bennett, could you, at your convenience, do that? Yes, she's nodding. Okay. We have, what time are we going to go to?
Until 5:45.
Okay, we have another 5 minutes. And we have, I see, four people from Anchorage, three from Kodiak, and eight from Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not going to finish this all today. Is there anybody who's under a particular time constraint? Because we will have to continue this hearing otherwise. Then, hearing nobody particular, I have, let's take somebody from Kodiak. Is there somebody from Kodiak to testify? Please commence. Your name and spell your last name and the group you represent, please.
My name is Nikki Bishop. I'm not representing any particular group. I'm just representing myself. I am a licensed daycare provider. Both of my basic concerns are the same ones that the ladies in the foster association went over, and I also have a few more, and I'll try to get through them. I basically agree with any idea of child protection, but at the same time, you know, I wonder about those who interpret the law, such as the touching section. You know, who interprets what is the good and the bad on the touching section?
You'll have to talk to
you know, you're dealing with all kinds of children and wiping children kind of infants. You know, you just have to take these same things into consideration. You know, when these laws are written, when I've read through these, it seems like every one of them is dealing with extreme cases, and those that are people who are charged are not always those who
accused of something, they have to prove themselves innocent. They're not, there's no, nothing that seems to be there where someone has to prove that they're guilty of something. And I think the big thing is, if you're dealing with a younger child or you're dealing with a teenager, you know, do people really believe that children don't lie? I have three children of my own, and I would, you know, I would never say that my children have never lied about something. I realize we're dealing with, you know, on the sexual end of this and on the abuse end of this, you know, a physical abuse or beating of children, that there's a broad range between those also. I was married at 16 years of age, and I was not a minor at the time as far as I was concerned. You know, at age 12, I was probably a minor. At age 16, I was married and had children, and I don't think I should have been considered a minor at that time. If I were a man at this present time, I'd be really upset about any of this legislation, trying to think if I had to be alone with any teenage girl, you know, 2 years previous or a year down the road, and if they get mad at me or whatever, trying to prove, you know, that I didn't do something. And who's to say, this isn't going to happen to any one of these people sitting there, or my husband, or anybody else's husband? I think there's age factors need to be taken into consideration on all of this stuff, most definitely.
We have people in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Lemuria, Georgia. Thank you very much, ma'am. We've run out of time. This bill will pass from this committee to the Judiciary Committee. And I'm really concerned to get this bill going because I think it's everybody's concern that we need to have some legislation on this. There will be additional time to testify in front of the Judiciary Committee. Anybody who did not get a chance to testify today, we would welcome you to send your comments and questions to the and any testimony to myself or any of the other representatives on the committee, Representative Hanley, Representative Thompson, Representative Pettyjohn, Representative Kopanen, Representative Taylor, or Representative Hurley. If you would like to testify, I'll make certain that you get a chance to do so. It'll be before the Judiciary Committee, though, because I'd like to see if we can get this bill passed out today. Unless somebody on the line has a serious problem with that, that would be my order. Does anybody, any member of the committee have a problem with that? Or any witness who has not gotten a chance to testify? I really apologize, but we do need to get this bill out. Unless there is a particular problem, Bill, are we off the line? We're going to get it.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yes.
We do have one person here in Anchorage who wishes to express her opinion at this time.
Please, then, how much time do we have?
Actually, we don't have any mail.
We have no more time. I'm sorry. We're just totally out of time. But if you can telephone Nancy Bennett with the information, we will make certain that gets given either to myself or to one of the other representatives, and we will make certain that you get a chance to testify in front of the Judiciary Committee. We're now off the air.
Okay, this is Bill McGill. This is this evening.
Probably not one of my constituents.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now, let's...
You got some amendments?
Yeah, I do. Well, Bill, Bill, would you tell the people there that Judiciary has this scheduled for Friday? And we'll see if we pass it. Okay. What?
Have it for Friday.
Let's if somebody has a comment, I can take this.
That's kind of what I want. How do
they
get it that quick?
How can they get it in when did they have it?
No, I'm just wondering.
How did they get it?
Assuming that it's given to them by
Friday.
Okay. Does everybody have the... the bill that says Hyde 4185.
Yep.
4185.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I think that we need to have a motion to have this particular committee substitute before us.
I so move.
Thank you. We have three motions. Representative Thompson, I didn't know you had it first. Okay. And the First Amendment here is
freedom of speech, is it?
Right. No, it's okay. the First Amendment is on page 8, lines 1-3, and we discussed this reporting provision in the subcommittee, and I talked with another lawyer who'd also been a clerk for the Supreme Court, and he was concerned, Ed Hine, didn't think that there was a constitutional problem with this. I think that there are severe constitutional problems with the last sentence, because what can be done is the processor can report to the police and they can get a search warrant.
All right, it's good amendment.
Okay, will you...
So I move Amendment 1 by Greenberg.
Is there any objection to Amendment 1?
No.
Hearing none, it's adopted.
Moving right along.
Moving right along. Amendment... Now, there was an amendment that is in this particular bill that is not a numbered amendment, but you ought to be aware they amended the title and that so that it amends rules 504 and 505 of the rules of evidence, and they've added a section 28 because it was Mr. Hines' legal opinion that this had the effect of amending those particular evidence rules, and we needed to do it. Does anybody have a problem? That's where technical amendment is not one of these. Okay. And the next amendment is amendment number 2 here. And this amendment is a substantive amendment. It amends on page 8, line 27, this section 16. It's a new section 16, and the key thing that it does, it's the bottom of page 8. No, it's section 16 of the bill, but it amends 47.17.040B. And what it does is it changes one word that's key. The present, there is a case, it's the Weatherhorn case, which is cited in some of the materials here. And the Court of Appeals in the Weatherhorn case said that the present reporting statute does not require the Department of Health and Social Services to give the report to the police. That is discretionary with them, so that unless there is a criminal case ongoing, the filing of the civil case does not, and the report itself does not automatically find its way into the criminal file. And it is in my feeling, in any event, that these cases are separate, and there should not necessarily be, in all cases, the report turned over to the district attorney. That could disrupt the civil child in need of aid proceedings. I think I'm stating that. Yeah, judicial should be in there. It should be civil judicial proceedings.
Because this one here, you change it out, civil or criminal proceedings.
I understand, but I think it makes it just clearer to leave it in. But I don't have any problem if you wish to...
you're the lawyer.
if you wish to strike judicial, the important thing is this: it's civil. Yes, Representative Thompson.
I was going to move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the amendment has been moved. Is there a discussion on the amendment? Representative Pettijohn.
Well, all you've done here, as I see the amendment, is you've taken out criminal, right?
That's all. That's it.
And, right, but the... Why should investigation reports not be allowed to be given to the DA?
If you have this, if you have the word criminal in, then in all cases it will go to the district attorney.
Well, it says in accordance with department regulations, investigation reports may be used.
I wonder if the two agencies would care to discuss, testify on this as to the technical effect, whether the amendment, if it's not adopted, if the word criminal in there, does that give the Department of Health and Social Services discretion, or does it require that the report be given?
Our interpretation from Health and Social Services would be that with the word criminal in there, that it would at least require that they be disclosed in full at the criminal prosecutor's request. Whether or not it means that it requires that they be affirmatively handed over, there are different levels. Whether they automatically go to the criminal prosecutor, whether they go upon just a verbal request, whether they go upon a court order.
If the proposed amendment number 2 is adopted so that it just leaves civil in there, would you still have the discretion to turn the reports over to the prosecutors?
I would think not without a court ruling saying that we could, ruling that was relevant. I think it would make it more difficult for a court to make that ruling, but we certainly could not without the court ruling.
under judicial proceeding, which is the word that was there now, and under the Weathermore interpretation, it said that normally the health and social services would not turn them over without court order. It did not rule out altogether the criminal prosecutor being able to get them if the court ordered them.
So if the language were left unchanged to just state judicial, then it would keep the present status quo.
That is the feeling of the Department of Health and Social Services. The criminal prosecutor, I believe in Gail is here, would prefer it to be clear the other way. We, the Department of Health and Social Services, prefer that it be left where a court has to make a decision about what.
Okay, so I
mean,
think...
we want to be cooperative, but we didn't want to have it just be totally open.
Okay. I think it's my fault in the drafting of the amendment. If the person who moved it is agreeable, I would prefer to change the language of the amendment to strike the word civil. So it would simply say judicial proceeding. And is that okay with you, Dave?
Don't move.
Okay, thank you. So the choice is, if you have the word judicial, then it adopts the Department of Health and Social Services position. If it says civil or criminal, then it would be the Department of Law's position. I think that's maybe a simplified way of putting it.
I've not heard from Ms. Oretzky.
Yeah,
Ms.
Oretzky, sir.
I'd like to hear what she has to say.
Excuse me.
Our concerns are, right now, of course, it does say judicial throughout the statute in several places in Title 47. And if you'll note, for example, I think there are two or three places right there on page 9 where it says immunity, civil or criminal proceeding, evidence not privileged, civil or criminal proceeding. That throughout, that appears throughout this bill. Civil or criminal proceeding is sort of the way by which you refer. If the term judicial proceeding is left, and that is, of course, the term that's in present statute, I think that it certainly would be some indication to a reviewing court that that language was not changed at the same time that many other pieces of language were changed. So it would be, in essence, a negative directive to the courts, if you will, to the reviewing courts, to say, we did not intend to include both civil and criminal proceedings, i.e., all you refer to is civil. And you'll note here it says investigation reports and reports of harm are not subject to public disclosure, blah, blah, in accordance with regulations may be released. Our concern is that a defendant, right now, reports of harm go to the Department of Law. And our concern is that a defendant, if this language is not changed, a report of harm goes to the Department of Law, there's a criminal investigation, ultimately felony charges are filed, a defendant could bring in a motion to suppress all of the evidence that was gathered in the criminal investigation because it was a result of a report of harm that was turned over to the Department of Law. And I think that that goes far beyond what this committee intends, that is, the preclusion of criminal prosecution.
Comments, questions, Representative
Pedro? Well, it seems to me that I guess I have to speak against your amendment.
Fine. Sure.
But I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be consistent. As Gail points out, we are substituting the word civil or criminal for the word judicial in other sections of this bill, and I don't see why we shouldn't do it in this section as well to allow the Department of Health and Social Services to issue regulations which will define the manner and the way in which they provide this information to the district attorney and to give them the rights. And Gail's talking about the fruit of the poisonous tree, you know, remember
yeah,
that one?
Yeah. Let me make a suggestion. I am going to withdraw the amendment because I'm not sure I totally understand the effect of it. And I think we, the people who are common to both committees, ought to meet with you folks and talk very carefully and see what we can do either between now and when it goes to judiciary, because I want to be sure I understand. Is there any objection to withdrawing the amendment? Thank you. Okay, the next amendment is amendment number 3, and this is a technical amendment. It changes one word. It talks about, when they talk about the privileges that are not in effect any longer, that are effective, on page 9, line 21, it uses the term attorney-client privilege, and the Alaska Rule of Evidence refers to it as the lawyer-client privilege.
I move Amendment 3.
Thank you. Representative Thompson?
Is there any distinction?
None. Zero. I just want to make sure that it's the same language as the title in the Alaska Rule of Evidence.
Well, semantically, there is a difference, but...
There is.
But that's what the rule of evidence is, and I want to make sure...
A lawyer is one who is skilled in the law, and an attorney is one who is an agent for another in legal matters.
Thank you. I've always wondered about that.
Do you move the amendment?
Yes.
Is there objection?
No doubt there are doctors and there
are
MDs.
Say that again.
And that's right. And physicians.
Write that down for me. Let me tell you.
I will.
We'll carve that in stone.
Yes,
we did.
Is there objection to the amendment?
None whatsoever.
Okay. Hearing none, we pass on.
Another one?
We get to know how many you got here.
How many you got, man?
Okay. There are five. There are two more. Nancy, I thought Peter would... Okay. This next is an amendment... This next is an amendment that was offered on behalf of Representative Gall, since he's not a member of the committee. He was talking in terms of adding mental injury, and we have a fiscal note, which I assume... Has everybody received that, Nancy? And this is by, I'm offering this by request, specifically by request, along with a letter of intent, which discusses the fiscal note. I'm sorry. Representative Gall testified that he wanted to add the term mental abuse, and you should have each received a copy of a letter from John Pugh does everybody have this? It's a letter dated April 8th, that this would add a $1.6 million fiscal note for this. Representative Gall asked me to offer the amendment, and the letter of intent would specifically bring the fiscal impact to the attention of the Finance Committee. I'm offering it on behalf of Representative.
Well, I'm afraid, with some reluctance, I probably will vote against this amendment because the definition of mental injury to me is so broad. Now, Representative Gold talked to us, and he testified about parents or other people driving children crazy, which I can understand if you are in a position of custody of a child and you torment the child's psychologically, terrorize them and drive them into some sort of delirium, then I could go along with it. But mental injury, as he's defined it here, can be very easily, in my mind, interpreted in a very broad manner, and I'm not comfortable with that definition, so I'll have to speak against the amendment.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too, reluctantly, will speak against this amendment, but for different reasons. My concerns have to do with the definition of a normal range of performance and behavior. Yeah. I'm of the opinion that what is normal in some sections of our state is not normal in others, and vice versa, and that too is a very ambiguous phrase, and to the extent that I'm not comfortable with it. I will also mention that I do have a concern about the size of the fiscal note as well.
Okay. Is there any other comments or questions on... Yes, Representative Hanley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to mention my concern. I think this probably, you know, while I think well-intentioned, but probably the same concern when we were talking about physical handicap, it opens up an entire new dimension to the bill. And I think that while certainly it's an issue to be addressed, I can't help but thinking that maybe some of this might also, some physical injury might also pick up a mental kind of injury that's happening at the same time. But to make this specific, I think would probably weaken the bill.
I understand. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I want to make sure everybody understood my concern about the fiscal note. I would not want this bill to be in jeopardy because of this additional fiscal note. And that's what my concern is.
Representative Hurley.
Well, I just wonder about, you know, the fiscal note. Because I do think that children are mentally abused. I know that we're all conscious of the costs and so forth, but it's time that, you know, we really need to address the fact that there is mental abuse that is not, I mean, it's subtle, which is hard. It is hard to define, but the fact is that I think society needs to realize that children are mentally abused.
Yes, I've got something to say.
I was going to thought their mental harm is in Title 47, but it has some more specific indicators. Mental harm as evidenced by any severe anxiety, depression, withdrawal. What we feel we need to be adding, what other states add, and when they add the level of mental injury, maybe it should be added, but we think we need some time to look at it, are the very difficult cases where the children have no other signs of injury. They're not otherwise in the neglect or abuse, but perhaps because their own parent is mentally ill, the child is very subtle, it's hard to prove, and it's very expensive because there aren't other indicia of abuse or neglect. That's why the fiscal note is high, and we had division cut that in half. We grilled them over it quite a bit at the commissioner's office because it's only provable through like several psychological evaluations. They're very difficult to prove before court because there aren't other indicia. These kids may be in, you know, well-kept homes and have all the money and not have any other sign except psychological or emotional injury. And it is there. It's not that it isn't there. It's that it's very difficult. It's very costly. We think we get most of the cases now because of the other indicia and the other neglect or abuse that goes along with it. But there probably are more. It's just right now the money you have.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Let me ask a question.
Question.
Thank you. All in favor of the amendment, please signify by raising your hand. Opposed? That was four. In favor would be Representative Hurley, Representative Copeland, and myself. Opposed, please signify by raising your hands. Representative Taylor, Representative Pennyjohn, Representative Thompson, Representative Hanley, the motion fails. The amendment and the letter of intent, I assume they were offered together. Okay. The final amendment is one of them that was discussed by Mr. Block, Dick Block, and this is, actually there may be one other. I could ask Ms. Seif on this, but this